Jaya, can I ask you to start and introduce yourself, and then I'll come to Tim in a moment.
Sure. Thank you, Ian. Hi, everyone. My name is Jaya. I am the AI and data manager at Penguin Wealth. I've been in this role for about a year and a half, and it's very exciting, and I'm really happy to be part of this conversation, actually.
Thank you very much. And Tim?
Hi, everyone. Many of you will know me because I've been on a few of these before. Or you might know me from when I was Chief Technology Officer at Progyny, which, if you don't know, is one of the largest advice firms in the UK and now internationally. I was Chief Technology Officer there for 5 years, using all sorts of different technology platforms. Maybe we'll come on to specific ones in a bit. Left at the end of last August, and I'm now acting as an independent advisor consultant to advice firms and also to advice techs. So having the pleasure of working with some of the best people out there, which has been really, really good fun.
Brilliant. And I would say, I would encourage everybody to feel free to mention things that have worked really well for you, and particularly share things that may not have worked. Yeah, this is all about collaboration and helping each other. In my experience, advisors don't really see themselves as competing with other advisors. They see themselves as competing with apathy and clients doing nothing. So the spirit is very much, do please share your experiences, good or bad, and do feel free to name the organizations that you have been working for. The whole point is to help organizations understand, how can we all learn from what each other has done. Okay, so with that, Tim, you just mentioned that you were at Progyny for several years, spent a lot of time assembling a tech stack there. Our subject today is all-in-one or individual components. I think it's probably, my guess is a conclusion that it isn't as simple as that, but perhaps I can come to you for your view so far.
Yeah, sure. So, I suppose I'll start by saying that Progyny, we went down the best of breed approach, or at least we tried to go in that direction. I'll be honest and say we didn't really put a huge amount of consideration behind the all-in-one kind of solution, because at the time that we were making most of the decisions, there weren't really many systems out there that you could consider all-in-one. I think the closest was probably IntelliFlow, because they had CRM back office and portal, and I don't think they had bought what was the cash flow planning tool called? Anyway, what is now IntelliFlow Planning at that point. So there weren't really any best of breed, all-in-one solutions out there. And so we, like many or almost all other advice firms, were forced to sort of cobble together the best bits that we could. The benefit of doing that is that you do get to pick what you want to use. You get to pick who you want to work with. You get to choose, in theory, the best systems and create a system or an overall ecosystem that is, in theory, the best that it can possibly be, because you're using all the best parts, so they must add up to the best possible outcome, right? But Ian, you're right, it's not always quite as simple as that. And I think there is an argument, probably a growing argument, to say that the all-in-one type solutions, while they will never necessarily be the best at everything that they do, they can still be overall the best because they do everything in one, and therefore everything's integrated, everything looks the same, feels the same. You've only got to learn one system, and it just works. So there is this kind of concept that the whole can be greater than the sum of the parts in an all-in-one solution. Whether there's anything out there that quite gets there yet, I'm not entirely convinced, but it's definitely moving in that direction. Having said that, my overall opinion is that single supplier or all-in-one solution will always be easier until it isn't easier anymore. Best of breed is always going to be harder, but for ambitious firms or firms with technical people or just the willingness and the resource to put into this, it can often be the only way to enable innovation. Because if you're with an all-in-one provider, you're kind of stuck with that all-in-one provider. And if they don't innovate in a particular area and someone else is, there's not much you can do about it, because they might not even want to build the integrations with the other providers that do the same stuff that they do. So the real question is, do you want to outsource your complexity to a vendor, or do you want to manage it yourself and stay in control, and therefore arguably get to the best overall solution just with quite a bit more work? So that's my overall opinion. Plenty more to say, but I'll let someone else get a word in.
Indeed. And Jay, let's come to you. I mean, you're in the process of putting it all together, are you not?
What's it like? A lot of fun. Okay, so I have a few different opinions about this, and I think it's so important to take into consideration your individual firm's size, values, resources, and needs. And actually, I think the best solution is a bespoke tech strategy for your individual firm. So maybe an all-in-one solution that which are available out there, which I don't think there is anything that really achieves that, but to some degree, some level, it's something that might fit you if you're a smaller firm with a smaller admin team. That might be your best solution. But whatever you're going to do and whatever you're going to bring in, it's really the strategy around adoption that's so important to take into consideration and is going to determine how successful you are. I'm never going to be in support of having a toppling, tech stack that is just like running out of your hands and out of your control, because control is a massive thing. And control, when we think about data infrastructure, this is something that I am learning every day, that actually some of the most important things to do when you're starting on this journey, actually wherever you are on this journey, is do an audit, do a map of your data and the way that it's flowing. Do you have a true one source for truth, then you're kind of in a good place. Then you can build on top of that and you can have fun. And actually, everyone should be kind of looking at building their stack into and making use of the best of breed tools that are out there, because there's so much innovation and exciting things happening with AI. So in the long run, hey, I want to be building those things in my own system and having my own. I'm pro having our own ecosystem. So for those of you who don't know, and this is where Tim and I have a bit of a crossover as well, in terms of our history, is we use Kuro, that's our CRM. And the first thing I did when I joined the team, joined this firm, was do a huge product analysis of all the CRMs available on the market. And hey, you know what? They're kind of all the same. They all have something that they're wonderful at, and they all have, a lot of flaws. Again, it's what matches you and your values and what you need. But what I loved was that we're moving over to Kuro on Power Platform. That's happening later this year. And for me, what's exciting is entering the Microsoft database and having at my fingertips all of these wonderful tools for developing our own automations and AI, two different things. That people don't really consider, and being able to have control over our data. And I'd love to talk about this kind of data spine and framework later on if anyone's interested in it, because that is how I think you build a good tech stack. So that's where I'm at. That's where we are with our journey at Penguin, is we're looking at migrating over to having our own centralized ecosystem, but we're making the most out of best of breed tools in the market right now, because yes, you gain all these operational efficiencies, but also we're retraining the team and upskilling the team how to use AI and incorporating AI into our workflows, which is massive at the moment. Even if you're not sure what tool is the best or the right one for you, getting your team interacting with it, engaging with it, seeing how your clients enjoy it, are benefiting from it and finding value, is a huge and important part of the journey, especially at this early stage we are with AI, actually. So yeah,
you've made a couple of interesting points there. A few things I'd like to pick up on things that both of you have said. I mean, yes, there's a paucity of complete end-to-end systems at the moment, although I think we're getting there. I think it's quite interesting if you look at Dynamic Planner these days, which has everything bar the practice management / CRM element. We've recently done some analysis looking at them and Salesforce, and that actually gets quite fascinating. Looking at people who have done it elsewhere, to build a complete new end-to-end system takes about 7 years. I mean, I heard people say they'll bring it to market, and I've watched various systems evolve over the years. The only people I can think of so far that have done that, there was a group of people that left Morningstar in the States about 8-9 years ago, called Advisen, and they have built a pretty incredible piece of tech, which is sweeping up market share a lot in the States. They've taken it into Eastern Europe. I'm trying to persuade them to bring it over here. The point about Curo and Power Platform, I thought, so they're still not quite got it across to Power Platform. I think that'll be such an important thing when they do it.
Progeny, since Joe's talked about it, I'll just fill in the background on the Progeny story and why we've got that kind of shared history. Progeny worked with Time for Advice to build the Power Platform version of Curo for about 2 years. And then we were the first customer to go live on it at the back end of 2022. It then took them another 2 years to figure out how they can essentially manage lots of different organizations' instances of Cura on Power Platform, because that's much more difficult with Power Platform. They had plenty of other bits and pieces to figure out as well in that 2 years, but that was the main thing. And then I believe back end of last year, early this year, they started migrating everyone else from the old version of Cura on Azure to Cura on Power Platform. So Jay's firm is part of that kind of rollout, which I don't know when they're hoping to complete it or if they will ever complete it. But yes, it's certainly taking a long time. It's a complicated thing to do, but boy, is it taking a long time.
I mean, the other thing that really interests me in the market at the moment, and as some of you may know, I spend a lot of time in the States, primarily because that's where all the leading edge stuff is being done. Really quite fun. I was over there in March, and there was one particular conference where both Google and Microsoft were presenting. Somebody from Microsoft actually said it was the first time they'd ever come and presented to a wealth conference, which wasn't actually true because I was in one in October where they had presented. But nonetheless, financial services and financial advice is hugely a very, very long way up Microsoft's priority list. And one question you might want to quiz, anyone looking at systems might want to quiz people on, is how close are the organizations they're working with to Microsoft and to their strategy? When I was over there in March, Microsoft was showing examples of how they see the world fitting together. And it was not... Well, it was significant that firms like Morningstar, like eMoney, which is part of Fidelity but not available over here, were very much being called out by Microsoft as primary providers. And the one thing with what, Morningstar have separated their North American business. They've got a separate non-North American business division, which is really important. And that is all on Power Platform now. Anyway, so I want to come on because you were both talking about the ability to take data and use it in a lot of different ways. Perhaps I've got two questions I'd like to pose to you. The first one is, because each time you bring in another system, you've got an integration, and that's a potential point of failure. So one question is, if it isn't all there, all in one, is there an optimum number? Should firms try and limit themselves to a smaller number of suppliers, or going the other way? Let's think about data lakes. Let's think about the ability for firms to actually control, own and control all their own data, and then actually they can run whatever they want to on top of it. But Tim, can I come to you first, invite you to explore both of those subjects? And if anybody else wants to join in, do please put a note in the chat.
Yeah, so I think there is almost utopian version of this, where every firm is completely in control of their own data, has full and open access to it, and has the ability to use that data in any system that they like. Now, generally, the way that you would approach that, if you want to aim towards that, is to build your own data lake, data warehouse, data lakehouse, whatever you want to call it, or at least some kind of centralized database that is completely open. So the approach we were taking at Progeny was to do exactly that. We chose Curon Power Platform because the Power Platform bit of it, or more specifically the Dataverse bit of Power Platform, provides that completely open database that in theory we, or Time for Advice, could use to do whatever the hell we like with our data. We also had a data warehouse sat behind it on Azure that was basically an ongoing backup so that we kept the history of everything. So in theory, that means that you can build all your own integrations. You can, like I say, use that data wherever you like, get access to the data, analyze it, whatever. And therefore, you are in a place where you can have, in theory, as many integrations as you like, or use as many different best of breed tools as you like. But that's just the theory. And actually getting to that position and building all those integrations is obviously a lot of work. So I do think, to your first point, there is an optimal number of systems, at least for most firms, that aren't going to push this to the nth degree and have every single best possible system. I'm not sure what the exact number is, but it's pretty low. It's probably like 3 to 5. And I think with 3 to 5 systems, on the one hand, you've got probably close to best of breed on most things, at least good enough on some other stuff. And on the other hand, you have still got 3 to 5 systems, and even that is getting to be quite a lot of vendors to manage, quite a lot of user interfaces for people to get their heads around, particularly if they're new and they're training or whatever. So once you start going above 3 to 5, it starts to get pretty messy. So yeah, I mean, personally, I would keep that number as low as possible. I would even keep it to 1 if you could, but like we've said, there isn't really anything that enables you to do that just yet. Good mention of Dynamic Planner. They're a really interesting one, and I think they're starting to get towards a vision where the magic number might be 2, because with Dynamic Planner doing all the ancillary stuff that sort of wraps around the edges of the CRM and back office system, and then leaving the CRM back office very intentionally to someone else to power, I think it's a really smart model. We talked on I think Paul, who's on the call, talked on a previous webinar about the fact that the CRM back office system is arguably becoming less and less important, and the wraparound tools are becoming more and more important. And you could even replace that CRM layer with your own data lakehouse or whatever, which I think maybe Paul could chime in and tell me, but I think that was maybe the direction of travel that Paul wanted to go in. So yeah, Dynamic Planner, really interesting one. The other one I will just call out while I'm on it is, I never know if it's Ningi or Ningi. Someone will tell me. Ningi.
Ningi.
Ningi, yeah. Thank you, there we go. Oh, right, okay, now I know. So that they are very much intending to be that all-in-one solution. I think they're the best example of a business that has started out on that path and is building and building and building. It's been taking a while, but and they fully admit that they're not quite there yet. I think they've got 3 core things that they want to build to be considered an all-in-one, and they've not quite built them yet, but I think they told me they're going to be there by the end of this year, or maybe into next year a little bit. But when they get there, they might be a real contender for an all-in-one solution. Will they be the best at every of those elements? No. Will they be the best overall? It might be for some firms. And as Joe said, it's up to that firm's priorities and goals and values and all those sorts of things to assess. But they're certainly one to watch.
I must say, thinking these issues through, something I'm seeing increasingly is for the smaller firms, there are fewer and fewer options. I mean, they may not be saying it publicly, but more and more of the tech vendors I'm talking to are saying, yeah, we're focusing on 20 advisors up. You know, and the it is a sad fact of life that it actually costs them economically a lot more to support smaller firms per head than it does larger firms. So Joe, I'll come back to you. Your view on the same subject, then I've got a couple more points I'll flag.
Integrations are an absolute pain. No matter how seamless they're sold to you and frictionless, they're not. Definitely not. You want to investigate how deep or, you know, most of the time, quite shallow, actually, those integrations are. What aspects of that additional tool sitting on top of your CRM has your core data and then the direction that's flowing, where there's data overlap as well. So overlap in terms of features and data. And then is that going to make the tool that you're bringing in kind of redundant because you're only using certain aspects of it? All of those things to consider. Agree with what Tim is saying. When you have modular stacks like this, it is complex and time consuming if you're doing them well, because you should be monitoring the due diligence in an ongoing way, especially when they keep adding on these AI, new AI features within that tool. So that, and then understanding again, that flow of data and how to use that interface and integrating those tools in terms of the integration aspect alone, not just the tool, the integration of that data and how that keeps flowing in and out and who's managing that, that greatly impacts your workflow. It's sold as like an operational efficiency. I have found in reality can be not so. Yes, improves consistency, accuracy, and quality of your data, but actually, is it really reducing admin time and time spent on low-value, repetitive admin work? Sometimes no. And actually, I can see the logic behind a lot of it. You want your map data to map into the right places, and someone has to manually, at the moment, check that. But it's very annoying, and it's not so straightforward. And then you have this thing with when you're using kind of one like singular solutions. I've lost my train of thought. Okay, let me go back to this and I'll answer your question about the optimal number. Okay, I'm gonna agree with Tim where I think for smaller firms it should be around 3. If you're scaling, then also the complexity probably of the services and things that you offer scales too, so you know, don't cap yourself around, so 3 to 5 or 3 to 6 is a very nice number. And when I say 3, I would cover, so I've been thinking about this a lot on this kind of like data architecture and framework that I use, at least when I'm assessing what tools we're using and where they're sitting. So you have your foundational layer, which is what I think of as like the data spine. And the stronger that is, the more flexible you're able to be. And that means being able to pivot as well quickly and adapt and bring in other tools. I am so pro being able to build as much as possible as well in-house if you can, which is another thing I like about Cura and Power Platform, because guys, there's so many fabulous low to no coding tools available on the market. Don't know if anyone's played around with like NAN and Make and all of these fun things, and even Replit. Go on Replit and spend a few hours and build your own CRM and just see how much more is becoming available to you. So foundation layer, so that is your CRM. So pick something that's strong and it's going to hold a lot. And yes, look at your data lake and your lake house and decide which one is best for you. And if you don't have a lot of resources in-house, move towards the lake house because that's all tidy and can be easily structured. But think about the capacity and things that you can do and the very fun stuff. If you have a data lake, which you can gather your structured and unstructured data, so all your meeting notes, those fabulous meeting notes that you're gathering from everyone who's using PlanPower, Saturn, Aveni, Advisory AI, all of those tools. I think everyone on this call is probably using one of those. What are you doing with that data? How are you harnessing it to do magical things and use it for coaching your advisors? What opportunities did they miss out? Checking their tonality and things like this.